Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. I am your host, Bill Sickens. Gretchen, Bill, welcome, welcome.
Hello there.
So we have an anniversary this week. We turned 12, and we're going to talk about that a little later in the first segment here. But it is kind of fun to think that this is, we're going into our 13th year. Second segment today, we're going to be looking at Octopath with the Vault, which I'm told is a game. So we'll figure that out, I guess.
It must have something to do with the number 8.
Yeah, I assume so. Actually, I think probably after that segment, we'll all know, hopefully.
All right,
let's go ahead and start with the news, and then let's talk a little bit about the past 12 years. What do we have in the news?
All right, Microsoft to charge for Windows hot patch updates. What exactly is a hot patch?
Okay, so you know how you get updates every week?
Yeah.
Usually, and you have to apply those updates, and it keeps your computer secure. We've talked about this a little bit in the past. One of the reasons why Windows 10 will be a problem after October is you no longer get updates, although they'll be available for another few years if you want to pay extra for them. But this isn't that. This is for current operating system, and we have got a lot of questions coming in about this. So I did a little checking on it to figure out what it is. And the way that Microsoft put out their press release in Microsoft fashion on this was very confusing, at least in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what prompted all of this, because what it felt like is we're going to have to start paying for updates. That's not what it is. What it is specifically for people running Windows Server and for this new type of update called a hot patch. And basically what it is it's an update that comes in, it's applied automatically and immediately, and it does not require rebooting the system. And when you have a server, that's a big deal. You don't really want to reboot your server unless you absolutely have to. And minimizing that is a good thing. So the cost of this is $1.50 per month per core. Okay. So if you have one server, the average server runs 32 cores. So that's the amount of money this would be. So it's an expensive service. Now you still have access to the original update process that works in the conventional way at no additional charge, but that's what that's about. So unless you're running Windows Server in a usually business environment, you don't have to worry about this. If you are and haven't heard about this, it's probably something you do want to look into.
The USPS warns Americans of new brushing scam, says to treat personal info like cash. Here's what to know.
So interesting thing here, and this is actually nothing new, but it's becoming more of a problem. And basically what this is you will receive a package, maybe a delivery like from Amazon or something, that you didn't order, and it just shows up out of the blue. Okay, so what happens? Well, the problem with this is, and what USPS is concerned about with this, is the fact that what they're doing is companies will sometimes launch a new product or want to get feedback, you know, positive feedback on Amazon or other sites like that. So they'll start shipping out low-cost items to random addresses and then pose as you posting feedback, fake feedback onto the site. So that's item number one. And number two is an issue that you have to ask your question, how did this vendor get your address, name and address? It means that your personal information has probably been compromised in some way. And this would be something that's pretty easy to do. If you buy stuff online, you have to give an address because you need it shipped to you usually. And the vendor will have this information. I know we sell on eBay and stuff. And even that site, when somebody buys something, I'm sent the purchaser's name, address, and phone number to have a place to send the package to. And while most reputable dealers don't do anything more than that, just use it for shipping information, there are some that capture this, and that is how they're getting this information. So it could mean that your personal information in some way has been compromised. And this is one of those things where if you start receiving, especially a lot of packages, there's been reports of this where some lady was getting like 200 packages a day for a while.
Oh my goodness.
And it was just all basically low value items. There's a different word for it that I can't use on the air, but that's basically what they were shipping to get records of garbage would be another word. Yes. of these things being shipped and then posting all kinds of reviews from it. So if you have that start happening, especially in large quantity, from what I've been told, you don't have to send it back. You're not obligated to do anything like that. But do watch your financial accounts. Make sure you don't have any weird charges. You know, the concept of changing the password, we've talked about this in the past, is fine, but it's gotten to a point now where so much of our information's out there that while you do want to keep secure passwords and definitely keep things like financial accounts with different passwords than other things, it's more now just you need to watch your personal information to see if anything has happened that you aren't worried about, especially when it comes to your money.
Google launches Doppel, a new app that lets you visualize how an outfit might look on you.
So this is something that's kind of interesting, and it seems to work quite well. It is exactly what you just said, and you can use this to buy clothing. So one of the reasons why this is an interesting idea, especially if it works out okay, is that e-commerce, there's a lot of things you can buy, and it's great and works well. Clothing is generally not one of them.
Yeah.
Now, Gretchen, you've had some experiences trying to buy clothing online. Have they all been good?
Oh, my. Well, I've had a few polo shirts that were okay. But, you know, how can you screw up a polo shirt? But then there was the dress that looked like it was a very simple, like, knit dress. And it was not designed for a human. I don't know what they were thinking. They failed design school. They failed sewing, basic sewing. I didn't know what to do with these horrendous things.
I still think they had one size and they ran out of the other size and they just cut the seam and added material. I think that's what happened.
Yeah. And but, it's like disproportionately large on one side.
Yeah.
That's not how you enlarge something. Okay.
Hello? No, it's definitely not. And that's a drastic thing, I know. But the thing of it is clothing, you know, sizes are different. We just ran into that with shoe sizes a while back. Mm-hmm. So it does make it harder to buy clothing online successfully. And a lot of the stuff that gets returned isn't resold. So if you return clothing, there's a pretty good chance it just goes straight to a landfill. So these are all things that are a problem. So apps like this, while it won't fix the problem that the sizes aren't really the same between different manufacturers, it will allow you to be able to visualize yourself in clothing that you might buy online and go, hey, that's great, or that looks terrible, and help to cut back on that a little bit, which saves us time because you don't have to buy it and send it back. It saves waste and all of that. So I think this is going to be interesting if it works. What I've seen from the beginning here, it seems that it does, but time will tell.
The James Webb Telescope changes everything. It locates the first water world in history, and scientists do not rule out the possibility it could harbor life.
So, James Webb Telescope has done a lot, and we're discovering new things, I know, pretty much every day that didn't know about, and it's disproving a lot of theories and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I first saw this article, I'm thinking about a, in my opinion, horrible movie that came out of the same name, World a while back.
The what?
Water World.
Yeah, Water World. Okay,
And if you liked it, great. I didn't. But in any event, that's not what this is. It's a planet that has actually been named TOI 1452b. Gotta love that.
So why wasn't it called Camino?
I think Camino.
Yeah, Camino. You know, like Star Wars and the clones, and it's all water.
Yeah, okay, that's where I was wondering where that name came from. I've heard it. You know, not a bad idea, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, this is a super Earth, and what they're looking at is not exactly a picture, but it's the ability to see different things about the characteristics of the planet. So it's bigger than Earth, what classifies a rocky planet, that where it is in orbit and all the rest of it, the weight and consistency is coming back wrong for if it was fully rock. So it's very likely covered with water or a liquid that does that. It's also in the habitable zone. I can talk today around the star that it circles, which is a red giant, Goldilocks zone. There's an easier word.
Yeah.
And it creates a situation where, you know, we're looking for life in space. And sometimes we're still looking for intelligent life here on Earth, but why not spread out and see if we can prove something?
Oh, boy. Oh, speaking of stupid, Watch out for fake emails from Amazon.
Yeah, this came out as an email to Amazon Prime members, mm-hmm. warning us to worry about fake emails to Amazon Prime members. However, I think this email is legitimate. So it is. I double checked it. What's happening okay. is the bad guys are sending out a message that will say, hey, this is Amazon Prime. We just renewed your membership for some weird amount of money. $600 it was one of the examples I saw. It's 129 a year is what it's supposed to be. And this payment has gone through. If you have any questions, respond to this email or call this number. Well, obviously, you can see where that goes. You call that yeah. number, you're not talking to Amazon. You're talking to the people that are doing the scam, and they're going to say, oh, okay, let's look it up here. Can you give me your name, account ID? Okay.
Your address.
What card was that charged under? Let uh-huh. me get the card number, the address. You know, they're very good at what they do.
Yeah.
So this is something where you want to be careful. And if you do get something that seems off, like you've already paid for it and they're charging a different amount or again or something like that, don't call or respond to the email or call a number in the email or anything like that. What you want to do is look up the actual vendor. In the case of Amazon, go to Amazon.com and chat with them. I have seen this in a lot of other things too, and I think it's becoming more of a problem. We just finished up the Prime sale, so very likely that's why Amazon Prime's being targeted right now. But I keep getting these kind of emails from companies like Comcast that mm-hmm. your bill has been charged, or the other one I got from them is your promotion that you're saving $20 a month on your Comcast bill is ending. Call us if you would like to extend it. Yeah, I'm sure you'll get a promotion. And it's not limited to just them. So it's something, and they're getting better with AI and everything else of making these things look real.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get something, again, the best way to handle it is don't reach out to anything that's in the message. Go onto the website for the actual company, find out the contact information, and then check with them. And then again, like we said earlier, watch your financial accounts to make sure nothing weird's going on. Although a lot of these emails are just being sent to every email address that's out there that they have. So it doesn't necessarily mean your information's been compromised, but definitely is something you want to consider. But the big takeaway from this is do not try to contact the company, Amazon, or anyone else from the information that's contained in the suspicious email.
Yeah, I got something from Facebook the other day that, I don't know, it just, it felt bad in the force. And it was like, you know, if I click on that, it's going to ask me to log in and put my password in. Maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a good thing. A while back, I almost got scammed by that. They were really good. I was busy, and we have a individual, Karen, who is wonderful and takes care of our Facebook social media, and she sends me an email. They're going to cancel the show's page. I look at this email. It looks pretty official. Okay, I'll click onto it, and it comes up, and you can appeal it and go through this process. And the next thing, and you know, what's your Facebook username and password? Well, that's where I stopped, because they should not ask me for that if they should already have it.
Yeah.
And then I went back to check, and this has been a very common scam. The idea is to get you worked up so you're not thinking clearly and you do things that you wouldn't normally do. So, yeah.
Yeah, the one I got sent me numbers saying, oh, somebody tried to change your password, you know, and it just, I don't know. There was something that just didn't seem right about it. So,
yeah, it's definitely definitely a thing. And the other thing, too, that's really important now, as much as it can be a pain, is set up multi-factor authentication. A lot of sites are requiring it now. A lot of them don't still. But it does create a situation where if somehow your password and username does get out, your account still is protected. I noticed this happened to one of mine when I started getting all kinds of texts with the numbers to log into the account. And somebody had gotten the username and password and was trying to do that. So definitely is something to watch. And again, it's just being vigilant these days, and we're busy and stuff happens and the bad guys know how to get you worked up. So it is something that eventually you're probably going to get scammed. And if it happens, don't feel bad. Just know what to do about it if it happens and what to do to try to avoid it in the first place.
Back into space, NASA discovers interstellar comet moving through solar system.
Yeah, and this is kind of cool. Atlas Project Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System. We got to like our acronyms, right? discovered this, and this is a project that looks for things that might be on their way to Earth and wipe us out. You know, we really don't want that to happen, although I'm not quite sure what we would do about it if we did. We might need to get a hold of the Grays and see if they have a tractor beam. But it would still be good to know about it because maybe something could be done. Now, this isn't targeting Earth, but it is something that we're going to be able to see here from ground-based telescopes through September. So if you're an astronomer, something kind of cool to look up the comet, and it'll give you information on where and how to see it, and the times and all that stuff that changes throughout the world. I'm going to try for this one myself.
Yeah.
A lot of people are able to see it, so it seems like it's not something you can see with the naked eye, but you can with a basic telescope.
Cool.
Cool.
So, I still don't believe there's northern lights, by the way. I still have not seen these things.
I still haven't seen them either. Don't feel bad.
We supposedly have had the most powerful solar storm, which I can attest to we have in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen these pretty lights, you know?
I haven't seen them either. And I have looked, and it's like there's not a lot of light pollution in my little area, and I should see them if they're going to happen.
I think this is a conspiracy by the Vikings to get tourism in the Norse countries, and I think that's probably all it is.
Oh, Iceland would be cool to visit.
Yeah, I wouldn't need a conspiracy. I actually want to do that. I flew back there when I was coming back from the jetpack training in England last fall, and this was at the airport, but it seems like a place that would be wonderful to visit. Mm-hmm. Not that that's off topic or anything, but it was definitely definitely kind of fun. So, speaking of topics, yeah, this is our 12th anniversary. We started in what was it, Old Town Mall in Reno, or Reno Town Mall, or something?
Yeah,
now.
I don't know. Called it Old Town Mall, but I think they changed it to Town Mall or something.
Yeah, and it was
boring.
In a studio that was in an old storefront. Mm-hmm. That did not have a door, among other things, you know, so it didn't have the best audio quality with all of that. But that's where we started. And Gretchen, that's where I got you roped into doing this originally.
Yeah, I felt sorry for you. You wanted to do it. And I'm like, OK, I'll read the news, which I did. I read the news.
Yep. And at the time, I didn't know what I was doing either and was reading things. And
Jeremy took pictures or something. I don't remember what he was doing. Yeah.
And as we figured out since then, the first thing you don't do is read things, because it sounds like
or record things in a studio where people are warming up trumpets. Children are crying. What were some of the other weird noises?
Somebody was running a drill, putting a sign up in the mall.
Oh,
part, I remember once.
Yeah, it was really irritating.
And Bill, you didn't see it these days, but I know, you know, we worry about hearing a car go by outside of the studio and it being picked up. But at that point, it was like just there. If you didn't have background noise, there was something going on that was weird. And the other thing of it is, I understand they've since moved to another part of the mall, but the area we were in at the time was under a power transformer. So you got a hum on top of everything else.
Oh, it was in a pivotal corner in the mall where you would either go down to the anchor store or go down the stairs to the other anchor store. And then the other direction, not far away, was the entrance. So it was not in a quiet location.
It is actually a beautiful mall. Mm-hmm. We've got so many dead malls going on now. This is one that's managed to keep themselves going. And they've kept their original decor. They still have the fountains and all of the original stuff. And they keep it up. And it's
The original stuff.
Oh, did they change it?
It was called Old Town Mall for a reason. It had these really cool facades that looked like from the 1800s. It was really neat. Wow. Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember that, but I remember there was a pizza place and a movie theater.
Oh, yeah. Those things used to be there, and those were cool. But they used to
Have fountains still. A lot of malls don't. That's where I was going with that. But I know it was an interesting experience. And then we went to an hour format later. And that comes from, and this is a question that's asked a lot, kind of an interesting answer, is why technology and pop culture? I mean, these are two different topics, right? And the idea for us to do that actually came from a Comic-Con technology show that Apple Computer did. Steve Wozniak was the promoter. Silicon Valley Comic-Con, which really did a nice blending of technology and pop culture. And I figured if Apple can do it, we can do it. And it really has worked. You know, we did some strange things sometimes.
But it also suited our personalities. You were hardcore into the technology And Jeremy and I were more hardcore into the pop culture. And, well, we needed some way to keep Gretchen and Jeremy still helping out Bill. And then Bill to help with the editing.
Yeah, well, Bill's been with us since the beginning, too. Bill, I know you weren't on air at that time. You have always been the producer until Jeremy passed and kind of stepped in for him. But I'm sure you can tell some stories, too, about how this has evolved, you know. I'm one that if I go out and say fix it in post, which is a common thing, I will get things thrown at me. So,
yeah. No, it's been a weird ride.
Do you guys remember recording at your apartment?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Early on. And
we would put all these blankets up and to try to absorb the sound. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, in those days, we didn't have, among other things, a budget. So if we wanted it to sound good, we had to try and make it work. And we got some mics from somewhere. We did buy the mixer. We spent a little money on that.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else was, like you say, towels and blankets and tape and whatever. You know, it worked. But things have, of course, evolved from that. And it's interesting where this has gone, because between all the different things going on, we did that. We were a podcast for a while. And then we got invited on to Salem Media, which is where we are now. And that was something that changed things. So our format, we were, you know, actually on air, on conventional air at that point too, which really was kind of cool. And we have pretty much produced a weekly show since then. And that has been also an incredible experience. And we went through COVID. So early on, we recorded in the studio at the local radio station. That's our home station here in Portland. And then COVID hit. So we were back in our apartments.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yep.
And at that time, we actually invested a little bit in home studios and stuff, and we still record in that way. We have access to the studio there if we want to, but really, most of our guests are from all over the world. There isn't a reason to do it locally like that anymore. And that's what, you know, has brought us to today, and it's been absolutely incredible. We've talked to some great people. I mean, just over the years that are very memorable and other things. We've gotten to see a lot of stuff with the different Comic Cons and technology shows that we wouldn't have necessarily been able to do. So it's been a lot of fun. And our programming, when we started and still today, is basically based on listener feedback. So it's what you send us is what we use to put together what we cover. And that's always worked out great, and it still does. And we love the fact that there's that interaction from everybody. I will say that now that I think most of you listen to the podcast, although a lot of people do still listen on air, but COVID really switched that around. Mm-hmm. Was the other way around beforehand. And it's still something that's great to be on both ends. And for our radio listeners, I love the fact that we're able to do that. It is very unique. And it is something
really
that
really expanded. We were just in the Reno area, and now we're on the BBC. Oh my goodness.
BBC, Portland, Seattle here, and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, no, it's really been amazing, and it's been an amazing run. All right, well, next segment is our game review, so we'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. Userfriendly.show is the one stop for everything about our show. You can play back episodes. You can check out Tech Wednesday. You can check out all the stuff we've done in the past. You can even look back at the very beginning. If you play back the first couple of seasons, don't say I didn't warn you, but enjoy them. They're all out there. We want to hear from you, and we want to know what topics you want to hear about. Now, gaming is definitely something we get a lot of questions on all the time. And to that end, James Sherwood, host of The Vault, is going to be joining us here with a game review in just a little bit. But before we get to that, it's interesting to look and kind of address some of the stuff that's coming in on where you get your modern games. So there are several different systems out there right now that are currently being manufactured for PlayStation and Xbox. Of course, Nintendo Switch 2 is now on the market. So there's stuff coming out for that. And then there's a number of other consoles that are actually actively being manufactured and have a lot of support that you may not have heard about. Atari's been back for a while now, which a remake of the old 2600 and 7800 game consoles, as well as some other things. They even have a remake of the original Atari 400 computer. And these consoles, not the 400, but the game consoles, will actually play the original game. So if you have a closet full of cartridges from 20, 30 years ago, you can actually use them again and they will work. Plus, they are putting out some modern things and some new things that are also interesting. Another one that's on the market is the Retrocade. This is one that I just got a hold of and have been playing with a little bit. And it is both a handheld, kind of like a Game Boy type idea, as well as one that plugs into the television. They take the same cartridges, and they do take cartridges. And it's interesting to see where technology has gone with this, because this is the first time I've ever seen a cartridge update when I turned it on. You normally get zero-day updates on software you would buy for your PlayStation or Xbox or whatever. And a lot of times it's just the installer, and then it goes out to the internet and downloads the actual software, get the newest version of it, or at least an update. Never seen that for on cartridge before, but it did on this, and it works just fine. And a lot of the stuff that's coming out for that, for anybody that's into retro gaming, is the original, in a lot of cases, arcade versions that sometimes you're not able to get or that haven't been done for a while, or what's out there might not be identical to what we remember from the arcade. So these are a lot of fun. The cartridges aren't that terribly expensive for it, and they're getting a pretty good library of games. So with that in place, we're going to be talking about a modern game, and with no further ado, I will hand it over to James Sherwood from The Vault.
So Octopath Traveler is a RPG in the same style as like fantasy, Final Fantasy and some of those. It was originally released on 7/13 of 2018 on the Switch and then progressed its way through Windows and Xbox One and PS4 and 5. It is a lot of fun. Of course, it also happens to be a genre that's near and dear to me. It was released by Square Enix, working with Acquire. It is single player. There's no multiplayer option. And for this one, I played it for about 30 hours. So a lot more in depth than my normal. And a lot of that was the fact that the storyline is quite engrossing. And I kind of lost track of time and kept finding myself drawn back to it.
Now, let me ask you a question. This is a game that's obviously been out for a while, with it originally released in 2018. And the most current one looks like 2024. Do you find that there's a difference in the graphics and engine and things when you have a game that's been out that long on future iterations? Or do they kind of just port it over as it is?
They ported this one over as it is. It's a very interesting blend. The base graphics are pretty much like an 8-bit.
Then I'd like it.
Yeah, then there's elements that are this super smooth, pretty high resolution. Water is a good example of that. You're walking along the beach, the sand is 8-bit, the characters are 8-bit, and the water looks almost real.
That's cool.
It's a really neat blend, and one of the things that I really liked about it is you can tell that where the graphics are easily recognizable, there's no difficult discerning where you are, what you're fighting, or anything like that. They didn't waste a lot of time or resource on it.
But I mean, a blend like that would be, I don't think I've seen anything quite like that, and I'm going to have to check that out. Well, tell us about the storyline.
So, storyline is one of the places that this game really diverges from the pack. Most games, you have a main character, you proceed through the storyline with that main character. It may be a variable character, you may create your own, or Final Fantasy VII, you add Cloud, and you're pretty much following Cloud all the way through. Or Skyrim, you build your own character and play your way through. This one, instead, you have 8 characters, and you play all of their different stories. And the interesting part, when you first start out, you pick one of these 8 characters to be your primary. And what that primary does is kind of starts where the storyline is going. And then as you quest, you can pick up the other 7 characters. Each character feels unique. Each character has its own storyline. Some of the storylines kind of cross over, But if you want to go in, Ulbrich was the one that I started with. He's the warrior. You can go in, collect a couple of other characters, ignore others, and just beeline through his story. Or you can go around and spend a bunch of time collecting all of the characters and then branching out. They're done in chapters. So you could do chapter one and all of them, and then chapter two and all of them. It really opens up kind of a free-form gameplay that for me was pretty unique.
Now, that sounds amazing. Now, the genre you talked about, is this set like in a medieval environment, or how do they do that?
It's pretty fantasy-based. You have sailing ships. There's no real steampunk to it. So, yeah, it's pretty much set in high fantasy.
Okay, all right, cool. Which is an area I know I love, and a lot of people do, so that sounds like that would be amazing. I'm still trying to envision this combination of 8-bit and modern graphics, so we'll have to definitely look at that. All right, so you can play through with one person. You can play through with finding the other characters, I guess, that would be in your party, kind of an idea, and then go from there. So it sounds like you have a lot of different directions, which is actually something I like, too, is games that you can kind of come back to and it's different if you do certain things that are different. Would this be one of those?
Kind of. The storylines themselves are pretty self-contained, but it's going to change depending on who you pick as a main character. And then it's going to change depending on which order you do the quests in. And then party composition, you get up to 4 people in your party, but you have 8 characters. And again, they each play very differently. So you really have a lot of that party customization, but the storyline itself is not going to change drastically. It's just going to be the order in which you're doing things.
Okay, kind of like choose your own adventure or something then.
Sort of. When I mentioned the chapters, it's literally you complete section 1 of character story, and then on the main map, it opens up, go here for chapter 2.
All right, so let's talk game mechanics a little bit. Weapons and some of the other ways. How does that work?
So weapons are pretty typical for the genre. You go from town to town. In the different towns, there's shops, and as you progress through the shops, you get better and better equipment. One thing with this one that does happen is the price on that equipment skyrockets very rapidly. So, again, in 30 hours, I kind of have my main character, my party composition finalized, or not finalized, but pretty well set for what I do, and I still do not have everyone maxed out on their equipment. The interesting part is there are, I believe it's 8 weapon types. Each character gets 1 to 3 weapon types that they can equip. One of the mechanics is the enemies have weaknesses. And those weaknesses are to the various weapon types, as well as to the elemental damages. And that plays a really key role in what you're doing. If you're in an area that you do not have that weapon type in your party that they're weak against, you will be at such a disadvantage. So that's one of those strategic points in what do I have in my party. And it's the encouragement to flesh out and branch out and bring other characters in. Because if I don't have anyone that uses daggers, and daggers is the primary thing that an enemy is weak against, I'm going to be really pulling up the rear unless I change that party composition a little bit.
And just playing into it, figuring it out, sounds like that would be certainly a part of it.
It is, and you can't change your party on the fly. You have to go to one of the major towns and go to the tavern, and in the tavern you can adjust party composition.
You know, that's one of the things I like about fantasy is it seems like you always end up in the tavern, so at least there's a positive there, right? Oh my goodness. All right. So you get out, and if you're good to go, then it sounds like you're good to go. And if not, it sounds like you have a problem and you'd probably have to figure that out. And that's probably part of the gameplay, I would imagine.
It is. It's really kind of fun. The towns around, or the areas around the town where you find the character, generally lines up, at least in my experience, with the weapon type for that character. So if I am playing the warrior, he uses swords and spears, or pole arms, I believe it is.
Okay, if I am... No, go ahead.
If I'm around his town, most of the enemies are going to have a weakness to one or the other. But they may not have a weakness to both. And there were a couple of enemies that didn't have those weaknesses.
Okay, all right. Well, that sounds good. And are there any other mechanics that go along with this? I mean, you have your fighters and stuff, but sometimes with these games, there's, I don't know if the hidden things really, but other stuff that's just fun.
So this has two other game mechanics that for me really kind of set it apart. And those game mechanics are, so there is a break aspect to this, or that's what it's called in the game. It's a really interesting component. So one of the things that it does is with these elemental and weapon style weaknesses, the enemies have armor level. And if you use attacks that they're weak against, that armor decreases. And when it reaches zero, they go into what's called break. Break allows them to take extra damage. It interrupts their actions for a turn. Really gives you an edge up. So, and on bosses will have charging attacks, so it'll take them one or two rounds or whatnot to get to the point where they can attack with it, and it tends to be very devastating. If you time it right, it breaks that charging cycle. So then you have an entire round where you can attack them.
Okay, so like a I don't know, what would that be like in D&D? Kind of a, I know what you're talking about. It's an idea where you screw them up for a round.
It's kind of like a stun feature.
Yeah, stun. That's the word I couldn't think of. So,
but for me, it was pretty unique. It's not something I've really seen in a video game before. I've run across mildly similar techniques before, but this one really brings it to the forefront. And then on top of that, you get what's called boost.
Okay.
Boost is a mechanic where each round your character gains a point and you can have up to 5 points. You can load your boost up to 3 into a particular attack or action, and it really magnifies the power. So now you have this component where you're having to make attacks, you're having to break the armor. Once the armor's broken, they take extra damage. And if you can then link that up with your boost and time everything correctly, you can come out and just really give them a wallop.
Okay, I've got days where I wanted to do that. So that sounds like a cool idea.
It is. And it's a simple mechanic, but it's one that's very well thought out. And I really enjoy the amount of flexibility and the amount of technique involved in combat. When you're fighting little minions, it doesn't really matter too much. You go around and use that boost one at a time, but you get some of these boss fights. I got into one, the fight itself took me almost an hour. And it's all real time. So I'm just plugging away at this. Or excuse me, not real time. It's turn-based.
Right.
Yeah. You get that feeling of pressure because you're wanting to push them out as quickly as possible.
That sounds good. Yeah, you know, we talked about the graphics a little bit before, I know already, but this idea of combining what would look like 8-bit graphics with modern is intriguing to me, and especially as a programmer. It isn't like you just dump 8-bit graphics into your game engine and somehow it works. You actually have to design it that way. So if you were to do 8-bit graphics on an old 8-bit computer, sure. But on modern computers that don't use text modes and different things like that. Everything is basically graphics. If you want it to look like that, you have to make it look like that, which is its own process. And so I don't know. I just find that intriguing, and I could see where it'd be kind of cool to look at something like that. It'd be almost surreal, I think.
It is one of the most unique art styles I've run across. And there's almost... it is a very neat blend. One of the downsides to it is you'll be running around, and at least for me, I'm immersed in that 8-bit graphic. I understand the graphic. It's what's making sense to me. It's kind of my reality at that point. And then they'll throw something like the water as the main example I can bring up into it. And it's almost jarring. It's beautiful, but it's almost jarring because all of a sudden my reality has this other concept thrown on top of it.
Yeah, now I can see that. I don't know, 8-bit days, that's when I actually could tell people I was an artist. They couldn't tell. So anyway, so does it also have an 8-bit soundtrack, or did they go modern on that?
The soundtrack is absolutely gorgeous. It is not an 8-bit. It's, I'm going to butcher this name, Yasunori Nishiki did the soundtrack, and it is fantastic. It is some of the most beautiful RPG music that I've run across in quite a while. I am not a music expert, so I couldn't put my finger on what really has it stand out. I just know the combat sound is good. After an hour of listening to it, I wasn't bored with it. The sound textures accompany what you're doing very well.
You know, I know sound is like a big deal, and it's used especially in a lot of modern games in different ways. And I've seen like World of Warcraft will have music and then it'll stop for a while and come back in. And that's actually a technique to how they do it. And Cyberpunk has some similar things like that as well. So, you know, the background is, it does set a mood and it does set the place and time where you are. And I think it is something that is very important to consider. And especially now, because, you know, you're not dealing with like you used to, where you had, you know, a limit of 3 voices on your sound card or something, and they're square wave and you have to try to make that sound good. And a lot of people did. There's a lot of people that were geniuses being able to work with that type of thing. But now it's basically, you can use, you know, it, basically MP3s in the game, stuff like that, where it's just plain, you know, sound. So you actually do have to sit down, compose it, put it together and make it actually work. And then you have the sound effects on top of that. So that part of it is its own discipline, really, on its, you know, on it. And if they don't do it right, you can have a great game that doesn't feel so great anymore because the sound's off.
Now, the sound effects for attacks and things like that, very 8-bit, really rolls me back to some of those early games in the genre. But the background music is just really neat.
That sounds great. So give us your overall wrap-up on it. It sounds like you like the game. How would you rate it? And since this has been out for a while, I assume some of the other people that do that have rated it as well. Did the critics like this or hate it when it came out?
So the critics liked it. It got somewhere in the neighborhood of an 8 to a 9 out of 10 for most critics. There were a couple of things for me that kind of detracted from it a little bit. One of the big ones was character development. When you first get a character, you start at level 1. So you're spending quite a bit of time farming, trying to get them up in levels, which to me seemed a little bit repetitive. A little bit of that, yeah, you get used to the character mechanic. Some of the maps were a little bit hard to follow and things like that. Again, really enjoyed the gameplay, put over 30 hours into it. It was a lot of fun. I would easily give this one a 9 out of 10 hammers.
I think it might be your highest rating so far. So, okay, cool. That sounds interesting. Where do you get it? You said it's out on Switch and Xbox. Do you just go to, is it like an online download or do you buy physical media? How do you get it?
Well, you could probably find it on physical media. I do just about everything on download because I don't like leaving the house. But you can download on Windows, I believe it's on Steam. You can download it from the Switch Play Store. You can download it on the Xbox Play Store. PlayStation has their version of the store that you can download it from. I waited for mine. It goes on sale fairly often. I believe I paid around $30 for it. So it's an older game. When it goes on sale, it's definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, I think I'll check it out. And Prime sale's on right now, so that might be a good place to look forward to. And by the way, for anybody that doesn't like to leave the house, in 2025, we do have some things like Amazon Delivery, DoorDash, and a few other things that allow you to be able to do that. But anyway, yeah, we had some listener questions come in, which is where I actually bring up that topic on physical media versus digital and that kind of thing. So we'll have to talk about that in a future segment. But it seems like it's based basically just on preference.
It really is. One of the things with the physical media that a lot of games are doing is you buy the physical media disc, you put it into your console, it then uploads part of the digital media or the physical media to the console and then downloads the rest. So you still have to have that online component. For me, for a lot of it, the days of just going and buying a game, throwing it in and playing it have kind of faded a little bit, especially with some of the larger titles. Larger size base, not necessarily just A-list or B-list.
Yeah, well, it seems like everything's a zero-day download now. I mean, you see that on most things. And like I said, I actually had a really unique thing. I have another console called a Retrocade that I've been playing with and looking at. We're going to talk about on the show in the future here this year. But it was the first time I've ever seen it. The thing's cartridge-based, like the older consoles were. So I plug it in. It does go online. And I put in a cartridge. And the first thing it goes is, you have a cartridge update. So I guess they have flash memory in them or something. It's a physical cartridge, but it might as well not be in some ways. So you see this across the board. And I know in the olden days, we could have used that. Games would ship broken. And that still happens now. But now you just download the fix. Back in the day, you couldn't download anything, right? So it would be a problem. So yeah, I hear you on that. So okay, all right, well listen, this sounds great and it sounds like one I'm going to check out, and I think I would enjoy something like this all the way around. It just sounds very unique.
It is. Again, it was one of my current favorites. I found it a couple months ago and I've just been It was on my catalog. I finally jumped into it, and I have just thoroughly enjoyed my time with it.
Now that sounds great. And if you would like to buy the game, go to userfriendly.show and click on shop. Click on any link in there, and that will take you to Amazon. And if you purchase through that, we get some of Jeff Bezos' money. So please do that, because it doesn't cost you anymore, but it does bring a little back. And actually, everything you would buy after that, too, you could buy the game and look around and then say, you bought a gravity jetpack for 450,000 pounds. That would also give us a little bit of the chunk of change on that too. So, you know, it's definitely worth checking out. All right. Userfriendly.show, thevault.show, James, is your direct link to be able to send feedback. And we welcome all of that in. Please continue to do so. Good or I don't necessarily say good or bad, positive or negative, whatever your opinion may be.
Yeah, and I look forward to hearing from everyone. And if anybody has any questions or ideas on content, anything like that, please feel free to drop me a line. And I look forward to talking to everyone again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you for being there. Until next week, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2025 by User-Friendly Media Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.